You're listening to The Profile.
Welcome to the Leadership Special, a show which features conversations with Christians in leadership about the topics that really matter. I'm Andy Peck, your host, and I've had the privilege of interviewing Christian leaders on over 1,000 shows, and so hope you'll enjoy this next conversation and will join us again next week. In my 20 years of hosting this show, I've heard leadership described in many ways, but never in the way today's guest describes it in the title of her book. The book's title is Beautiful Leadership, with a subtitle, Your Personal Framework for Authentic Impact. The author is Dawn Stallwood. She says in the book, leadership, when practiced with intentionality and care, can also be experienced as something truly beautiful. Beautiful leaders attract, inspire, nurture, transform, and galvanize. End of quote. So Beautiful Leadership is also a leadership framework that Dawn has created for professional encouragement and personal development. So I'm looking forward to talking about the book, and in particular at two themes she develops, the importance of listening in chapter 12 and the importance of empowering in chapter 16. So Dawn, welcome to the Leadership Show.
Thank you for having me. Very pleased to be here, Andy.
Congratulations on the book. A little on your own background first and how you came to write it.
Okay, so I'm 51. Let's start with age and work backwards. So 51, turned 50 and had a sense of legacy. So, you know, what's next and whether there was something I could write down or leave behind. So that's where the book sort of came into its own, if you like. Also inspired by my involvement with Faith in Business, which is a faith-based organisation that looks at the intersection of leadership, workplace and theology. And every year they do a retreat and there's a theme for each year. A couple of years ago, that theme was beauty in business. And I was asked to speak on beautiful leaders. And that got me thinking about, well, what does that actually mean? I was very menopausal at the time. And so couldn't really remember things particularly well with brain fog. And one of the things that I was able to do was to construct my thoughts around two mnemonics, one being beautiful and the other being leadership. And that became 19 chapters of the book. So a big shout out for Faith in Business of Cambridge. They really were an inspiration to get that going. My professional life, I started out as a corporate lawyer in-house and then in-house and in the city, and also a notary public. So as a result of my sort of corporate mergers and acquisitions work and growth work with businesses small and large, I've been exposed to leaders and their management teams for nearly 30 years. And so without realizing it, the thing that I've become sort of a bit of a specialist in the sense of needing to understand how they tick has been leaders. Because as an external advisor, whether you're on a deal or advising into a corporate on a bid, you have to really find a way of relating and coming alongside the leader. Not all leaders are particularly agreeable people, so I've had to learn the art of finding a place of common ground and learning an awful lot about leadership, the varying styles of leadership, but it becoming very personal and how those leaders show up in a deal or in a crisis or in their business as usual. And that's informed both how I deliver the consultancy work I've done over the years, but also now how it informs the work I do now through the book as well. So there you are. That's me in a nutshell.
Well, you've done very well. That's fabulous. At 385 pages, 24 chapters, you poured you poured everything into it. Which chapters did you enjoy most, or perhaps which were the hardest?
Oh, that's a really good question. There's a quote in the book where I say, I thought when I was writing this book, I was writing it for you. But the more I wrote it, the more I realised I was writing it for me. So that pretty much sums up that every chapter had elements of it that were difficult for me personally, because it became a bit of a to-do list. You know, it's definitely shifted me, and I've had to do that introspective work whilst writing it for it to be authentic. The chapters I've particularly enjoyed writing, I enjoyed writing L is for listening. I've enjoyed writing S is for space and lead to serve. In particular, they all really resonated with me. S for space and setting boundaries has been quite a challenging chapter, and it's one I've been putting into practice this last few months, having had a bit of a health emergency in December. So I've been practicing what I've been writing, which has been interesting. And I think the chapter that I was most pleased that I wrote was actually the chapter that we call the faith connection. So because I talk about there being two inspirations for beautiful leadership, one being the faithful, or who I call the leaders, and the other inspiration being my faith, I didn't want this to be a mainstream Christian leadership book. I wanted this to be a book that would be accessible to everybody, regardless of faith and where they might be on their faith journey, or none, because the vast majority of leaders I've worked with don't share my faith, but yet we found a way to work well with each other and support each other. So I wanted to be able to lean into my faith, but in a way that was subtle and allowed people to go further if they wanted to, but to skip it if they also felt that that was what they wanted to do. And in writing it, I hadn't realized that it would be more helpful than I had first sort of anticipated. So by which I mean, sometimes it's difficult for us to find the words when we are Christians in leadership or in business to express how our faith shows up in the decisions we make, or the way in which we try to operate, and how we sort of challenge ourselves as leaders. There's a lot of introspection, I think, amongst Christian leaders, as terms of, have I done that right? Is that sort of, congruent with my beliefs, etc.? And how do I articulate that without it being too preachy or overly evangelical and I switch people off? And so the chapter on faith connection takes us through the whole framework and leans into what I think are important scriptures or teachings from Jesus around those particular qualities or practices. And in doing that, it's helping people to find some language to express some of those things in a way that might be helpful to their particular audience. So I think I'm quite proud of that particular chapter.
Sure, yeah, you articulated it very well. I think that's very much a dilemma that many Christians in the non-believing world certainly find. We can't look at the book in detail. I wanted to look at two areas that many Christian leaders can find challenging. And as it happens, I did choose the listening chapter, so the one that you enjoyed writing, and also empowering, so because I think those are two key things. So your listening chapter quotes Bob Buffett or Buford,
Buford,
who
yes.
it's B Buford.
Unfortunately, he's passed away recently. He passed away
Has he?
last year or the year before.
Oh, bless him.
Yeah,
Okay.
he's behind the Half Time Institute, which has been taken over by faith-driven entrepreneurs.
Okay. So I also recall the book Half Time, and that was an inspiration to you. So what do you explore in the chapter about listening?
So I think listening is, I'm very intentional when I use the word listening in the book, because it's not just the practice of listening, it's the practice of listening to learn. Not listening to speak, it's about listening to understand. I know as an advisor, I've been guilty of, and I am still, unless I really catch myself, I'm guilty of listening to you. And as I'm listening, I'm formulating my response, or I'm formulating my advice, or I'm jumping ahead to the next few questions. And the art of listening to learn is that you slow the listening exercise right down. So it's an empathetic listening, I think, is what I'm sort of really sort of focusing on. And if you're intentional about wanting to understand, I think it changes the way that you listen. It changes how you choose to listen, the environments in which you place yourself when you're trying to listen. If you hit a leader at the worst time for them with a meeting where you really need them to listen, but they've got a million other things going on in their minds at that moment, or they've got a very sandwiched day, it's not the best time for them to listen well. So, either the leader recognizes that and they reschedule the meeting, or they remove obstacles or things that could be barriers to that listening, or perhaps the person who asked for the meeting takes a step to have the empathy and intuition to say, oh, well, actually, maybe this isn't the best time for me to ask this individual to listen to me. I'm not going to get what they need. They're not going to get what I need. So let's shift the meeting. So I think there's a real responsibility to making sure that we listen well, both the person who's speaking and the person who's listening as well. So I think it's a relationship. And in the book, we talk about how In the faith connection part of the book, we talk about how that Jesus listened. He for his short ministry, he did a lot of listening, and probably far more listening than is articulated in the Gospels and Paul's letters. It's more around, he listened and then he spoke, and he wasn't necessarily quick to speak, but he always seemed to listen from a perspective of having understood the situation or the moment or the need. And so that we can take a lot from that, I think, in how we listen. Yeah, so that's some of the themes that the book chapter itself and its adjunct, the Faith Connection chapter, also speak to.
Sure. And could a listener, sorry, could a leader listen too much in the sense of that they're just listening to everyone, but they never actually make a decision or get on with what they need to do?
Oh, absolutely, and it's why in the framework of leadership. So, just to quickly for your listeners and your viewers, beautiful is a mnemonic, and it tells us of the nine qualities that help us to be attractive as leaders. And leadership speak of 10 practices or disciplines that amplify our impact as leaders. And unsurprisingly, L is for listen, and E is for execution, because ultimately leaders have a job to do, and that is a job to make a decision to steer the ship, as it were. And so, yes, procrastination is often a plague that leaders have from time to time upon them. And there's a need to listen, and there's a need to find a consensus where you can. But ultimately, if you can't, somebody has to make a decision, and somebody has to move it forward. So I think listening is around helping the experts in the room share their insights so that you have the complete picture, you have all the information that you need as a leader, and then to work out what the best decision is. So yes, you can listen too much and end up stuck in not making a decision at all. And I think that's one of the reasons why in Beautiful, B is for brave, because leaders have to show courage, don't they? Not all the decisions, despite all the best listening in the world, not all the decisions that a leader will make will necessarily be the leader's best decision, or a decision that in hindsight they wish that they'd made. So bravery comes into it a lot when you're thinking about how you decide after you've listened. So yes, procrastination and not deciding is as much of a problem as not listening and being rash in your decision making. It's a question of balance.
Now, chapter 16 is a key topic for Christians in leadership. It's on empowering. Too often, leadership structures in the church and charity world fail to empower. The chapter also speaks about delegation, so it may be useful to outline the difference between the two and why you believe they're both so important.
So if you want to get something out of your inbox, delegate away. If you want to create future leaders, focus on empowerment. I think it's as simple as that. It's all about capacity building. And I quite frequently have conversations with leaders where they will say, I'm trying really hard to empower or to delegate, and it just keeps coming back at me, or I'm just failing at it. It's just not working. Why is it not working? And then that's a conversation that can be a bit uncomfortable, because the truth be told is that part of the reason why we may fail in empowerment at times or in delegation is actually of our own doing, not necessarily the person that we're trying to empower or delegate. Sometimes it's on them as well, but there's a moment with empowerment to really have a self-awareness check-in. What is it about me and my style of leadership that might be impairing my ability to empower somebody? But when I talk to clients, it's all about capacity. And if you think about, Jesus, he could not be, despite him being, God in human form, taking on the experience of us as humans on earth for the time that he was here, he still wasn't able to be all things to all people everywhere, because he took on human form in that moment. So he empowered people. He empowered his disciples. And off they went. And they often went out in groups. But he skilled them. So he was the coach. He equipped them by telling stories and sitting with them and eating and sharing insight and guidance. The Gospels are full of those insights that he shared with his team. And then he sent his team out fully empowered, equipped, resourced, and enabled and supported. And so that's something that we can model in how we choose to empower. And I think if I look at what goes wrong with empowerment, and it so becomes more like delegation and not something that's capacity building, it's the coaching part. If you really want to empower somebody to take on something that you could do with your eyes shut, but you want somebody else to do it for you, they have to own the outcome. They have to own the manner in which they are going to achieve it. And you have to sit and wrestle with that if you're uncomfortable. But the coaching and sponsoring part that comes with empowerment is really important. And I think there's a gap there sometimes. And that's probably down to space and just having the time to do it. But if you empower through coaching and you accept that they have to do it their way and you have to be okay with that, and the outcome might not be exactly as you would want it to be, but it's probably good enough. You have to get comfortable with that. And if you can get comfortable with all of those things, then I think empowerment is very achievable. And then you grow your capacity. You also improve your chances of risk management. Because if it's all on you as a leader, when there's a crisis and you're spread too thin, what do you do? And the final point about empowerment is related to the practice of difficulty. And, if there's a moment of difficulty or challenge in an organization and you have a tendency to be a bit of a superhero and jump back in and try and fix the problem, the alternative way is to actually use the difficulty wherever you can. It's not always possible, but where you can, to use it as a learning experience or a coaching experience for individuals that they might themselves grow in managing that particular crisis or difficulty. And that's really powerful for them, because you don't forget those moments when you've overcome. You remember those moments and you build your confidence from that. So empowerment is really important.
Absolutely. And one of the reasons for selecting that of all the traits that you took look at was that is that Ephesians 4, we have apostles, prophets, pastors, teachers, evangelists to equip God's people for works of service. So the and that's part of the my concern in our show is that yes, we want to build up those with named leadership, but also we want leaders to empower the church that those that they're leading to serve and to do better. And sadly, too often people are focused on their own ministry and not on equipping and empowering. So thank you.
I think you're right, but I think also, Andy, it's a case of even if you don't have the word leadership in your job title, we all have a responsibility to lead ourselves in how we serve others. And so there's a, it's not a case of, well, you're the leader, you lead, and I'm the follower, I don't. It's actually, I think it should be a simple question that we put to ourselves, which is, what can I do on a daily basis that can help my leader lead better today through my actions? And if we all took that attitude, then, who knows what the possibilities could be? Because the truth of it is that leadership is imprecise, and the vast majority of leaders are to some degree ill-equipped. And I don't mean that in a condescending way, it's just a reality. Most people find themselves, including me, when I had leadership roles in my law firm, I wasn't coached in it. I hadn't had professional development. I'd had some private coaching, but I wasn't ready for it. And so it's an experiential discipline that you're learning on the go, which means we all have traits and idiosyncrasies and imperfections or challenges about us that make leading difficult. So if we all take responsibility for what leadership can look like in an organization, then that can only be a good thing. And again, the Bible and Jesus' teaching talks a lot about unifying. It talks a lot about carrying on your own, taking up your own burden, but also being alongside to help others, even if it's not in your job title.
And you talk in the book about how you were empowered in the past. I don't know. I don't know if you can succinctly share one of those stories.
So I would say that I hadn't realized I was being empowered until I wrote the book. So I look back now at some of my partners that I worked with in my law firm, and my first in-house head of legal director, who sort of really gave me an early opportunity. They were each in their own way, probably at times in a bit maybe a bit clumsily, but they each in their own way were definitely empowering me into my potential. And one of the nicest things I've been able to do with writing the book is actually go back to some of those individuals and say thank you, recognizing it and saying thank you. So yeah, so I've certainly been empowered along the way. I've also been empowered by clients along the way who have seen something in me that perhaps I haven't seen in myself and have gently pushed or positioned me. Hasn't always been comfortable, but you find yourself growing in those moments. So that's been wonderful. What a gift.
Dawn, you in your book, it's quite clear that you're passionate about this topic, and it comes across in your in the interview. What do you hope the book will do as readers go through it and reflect on things?
Well, I think the first thing I wanted to do is to give people permission to be imperfect and to find leadership difficult and to want to improve. Because I think if we start there, then that's a good place to start, and it acts as a springboard, because none of us are perfect in leadership. We all have work to do. So let's just be straight about that to begin with. And I think if you've got that as your base, then you've got a persistent learner attitude, a teachable spirit attitude, which I think is essential when you're in any leading role, whether you're a veteran leader, aspiring leader, or a leader who's just starting out. You need to have that teachable spirit, and that needs to be with you until the day you stop doing the leading role that you may have, because that way you stay humble, you stay open to personal growth. So for me, the book, I want it to be a real encouragement to people. I want it to be a personal framework for everybody who uses it. So it's very much about, this is what I think the top 19 things we should have in our toolkit should be. It doesn't mean that that's the right 19. There might be others that you do choose. It might not spell the word beautiful, but there might be others that you would choose. So I want it to definitely be an encouragement and a place to start, and try to make it really, really practical, and not overwhelming. None of these things are major muscle moves. These are small incremental steps. And the interesting part about writing the book and building it into a framework has been the interrelation between the qualities on the one hand and the practices on the other, and how they actually support each other. So let me give you an example. If you are feeling like your empathy tank is at a low ebb, don't focus necessarily on trying to force yourself to be more empathetic. Instead, focus on the practices, because you might find that there are some practices in that word leadership that will help you naturally be more empathetic or to refill your tank. So, am I listening enough? Am I recognizing that I'm in a difficult moment? So, practice difficulty. Have I created the space in order to be able to do the listen, to do the empathy work? Am I being impatient? Do I need to hold? What things about me do I need to improve to help my empathy? And am I really putting that into practice? So the practices help the qualities, and the qualities support the practices. So that's been really nice. And I hope that really comes through when people read the book, because it means that you're not on your own. You can see it as a bit of a coach. And if we can help Christian business leaders find a way of being able to articulate essentially what are the messages of the gospel into their workplace environments in a way that they feel comfortable with DEI and everything else, then that's a good mission field for me. Because when I look at the news and I read the stories in the newspapers, we need an army of beautiful leaders. We really do. And I feel that that's part of the workplace mission that we all have as Christians.
Well, thank you, Dawn. You say in the book, and I quoted it in our introduction, beautiful leaders attract, inspire, nurture, transform, and galvanize. So who wouldn't want to be like that as a leader? So
Absolutely.
how can people get a copy of the book?
So to get a copy of the book, you can go to thebeautifulleader.com. That's if you're based in the UK. And then I get the great joy of being able to write your name and a personalized note in your very own copy. Or if you are international or want to use your Amazon account, then please go to Amazon as well. And the other thing I would say, Andy, is that this was birthed out of my involvement with Faith in Business. So as an additional resource, please head to faithinbusiness.org. because it's been hugely informative for me in my journey over the last 10 years or so. And I felt that I've had much more permission to be a Christian in my workplace and leadership environments and my advisory roles because of that, and also some of the resources I've read through Premier. So resource up, I think, is the message.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, Dawn, so much. We really appreciate
Thank
all
you.
you've shared.
Thank you for having me.
That was my conversation with Dawn Stallwood, STALLWOOD. And the details again that she gave of the book, go to her website, thebeautifulleader.com, and you can order a copy. And she has promised to sign it for you. Or if you're outside the UK, go to Amazon.com and you can order it there as well. Dawn also gave a shout out to faithinbusiness.org. So do go there and find resources, as it sounds, for those Christians in the business world. We had a chance just to look at two topics, listening and empowerment, but you'll gather from Dawn's covering of those topics that she has a wealth of insight and perspective on many other areas too. So if you're able to get a copy of the book, it would be well worth your while and be much to work through if you do so. As always, you can find archived versions of the Leadership Show by going to the Premier.plus app or website and just type in the Leadership Show. It comes up as the profile podcast every week. And the Leadership Special is there. Or you can go to your podcast provider, type in the Leadership Show, or indeed the previous name, the Leadership File, and you'll get many hundreds of past shows. I was impressed with all that Dawn shared on listening and empowerment, both topics that many Christians in leadership struggle with. And so maybe this week ahead will be an opportunity for you to practice one or the other, or even both, as you interact with those that you seek to serve in leadership. So this is Andy Peck, your host, thanking you for your company and looking forward very much to the next time. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.